B-Pod Studios.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
For this. This is Felt and Matt.
Oh, that's stupid. My God.
Oh. Told you so.
Presented by DraftKings Sportsbook on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
All right, hour number three of the program, Felger and Maserati, once again from our brand new temporary Town Fair Tire Studios in Needham at the NBC Media Center, which is we are temporarily in between our home in Dorchester, which we're out of, and moving into a new home in Waltham. And in the intervening weeks, we will be here and looking forward to it. Good setup here. Simulcast follows us here. Obviously, all they have to do is turn the cameras around, and we're back up on NBC Sports Boston. But they're actually taking our set that we have in Dorchester, chopping it up, right, because you can't get through the door.
Correct.
And then reassembling it back in Waltham, right?
Right. When you say chopping up, like taking it apart.
Yeah.
Right? Like they're not you know, turning into kindling.
No, they're going to disassemble it and then reassemble it.
Correct. The couch in half so you can get it in the house.
Yeah, so think of it as we've moved out of the house. Now they're moving our furniture, and then we move back into a new house.
So that's it. So we'll be here until that time. So we haven't gotten to the Red Sox yet. Any developing Red Sox thoughts and opinions? They've taken a pretty good beating over the last week, and deservedly so, I would say so. The follow-up from yesterday at the All-Star game, you know, Alex Speer reported 2 days ago that the Red Sox used Matt Olson's 8-year, $168 million extension as a basis for negotiations with Devers, which people found laughable, and apparently so did the Red Sox, because Alex Speer followed up yesterday by saying Devers confirmed that the Sox proposal in spring training had used Atlanta first baseman Matt Olson's 8-year, $168 million extension as a basis for negotiations. Quote, "The Sox offer was pretty similar," said Devers. "I know my value. I don't want to be compared with anyone else, regardless of what the position is. I'm me, and that's who I want to be compared to. I know what my value is," end quote. Asked if he wanted to say what that was, Devers and locker mate Xander Bogaerts both broke into laughter. Quote, "You're trying to get me," Devers said. Now, I think a lot of people have taken that laughter as them laughing at the team. The line, you know, people left out the line, which is Devers saying, "You're trying to get me," meaning they laughed at Speer for trying to sneak one past them.
Exactly.
Okay? But if you want to just stop there and not read the Devers quote, they broke into laughter and you want to have them laughing at the team, we'll take that too.
Yeah, look, I tell you, I think what it tells you more than anything is how big the gap is. The gap's huge. So let's say it's 8 years, okay? Let's say that Devers agrees with the length of the deal. Well, then we're talking about something in the range of $13, $14 million per year difference. That's what it is. That's astronomical. They're offering him, call it 60% of what he thinks he's worth. So again, now can you settle at 80? I don't know. I mean, we'll see how that one shakes out. But I was just saying, just quickly, I was saying to Murray during one of the breaks, the one thing you can say is that this problem right now doesn't feel exclusive to the Red Sox as much as because Juan Soto is in a thing with the Nationals. Murray's been reading the headlines all day about they wouldn't.
So, unbelievable story. If you haven't listened to the headlines, just give it to us again real quick, Murray.
Yeah, again, so obviously Juan Soto won the home run derby the other night, but his agent today confirmed the Nationals refused to charter him a flight to the home run derby after Soto rejected the $440 million extension, so he flew commercial, arrived in L.A. at 1:30 in the morning, and then, of course, won the derby.
I mean, think of that.
Do you think that that's petty on the part of the Nationals?
Yes.
Or do you say, hey, F you. You don't want a half a billion dollars? You can fly yourself.
No, it's petty because I think that it's pretty much standard operating procedure for when.
Is it?
I would say so. I mean, again, you know.
They don't fly out for the All-Star game? So this is the Derby, not the game. So does he have to go a day early or something? Like,
I think it's one and the same because all the players are there.
The A's just did this with the one guy that made it from their team, but they only did that because they're cheap. They said, hey, if you want to go, fly commercial. We're not going to fly you private. So he ended up going with the Houston Astros.
I mean, I think it's
that's crazy.
It is. I think it's a bad look. Yeah. I do. I think it's a bad look because, again, it's an MLB event. It's not like you are going off doing some sort of thing promoting you.
Right.
It's helping to promote the game, and I think the team should pay the player's way. I do. In fact, I'd be willing to bet it. I wouldn't be shocked if it's like part of the CBA or something.
Right.
Now, so they're giving them the finger, and I would say get over it. Okay, get over it. Like, so there's that going on. Aaron Judge and the Yankees is going on. It doesn't sound like they want to pay him. That's been an issue.
Can I stop you once?
Sure.
And play this cut from last night? So, again, Maz is making a good point that the Sox aren't the only one that seem to be at war with their players a little bit. At war may be a little strong, but you know what I mean. At odds with their player. Aaron Judge is asked by a sideline reporter yesterday. I don't know if it was during the game or before the game. And, Jimmy, if you could just pull up the cut, she says, you know, there's a friend of mine's kid who's worried about you not being a Yankee. And that's the question. Listen to how Aaron Judge answers the question.
And Aaron, finally, I have an editor. His name is Matt, and he has a son named Jacob who came up the other day really upset from his school in Astoria. He just came over. He's like, are you telling me that Aaron Judge may not be a Yankee after this year? What do you have to tell to Jacob right there and tell your fans that want you to remain in a Yankee uniform? I wasn't going to put you on the spot. I mean, we're on live TV.
Yeah, Jacob, buddy. We got a lot of great Yankees on this team. You know, there are a lot of great Yankees. Be here for a long time, you know. So don't be upset. Don't be upset. Hopefully you'll be a Judge fan for life.
I mean, talk about, he basically said, kid, there's a lot of other guys to root for. You can root for me wherever I'm at. I mean, there's a lot of other Yankees to root for. Like, there's a lot of great Yankees that'll be here for a long time. You can root for me wherever I'm at. I mean, that's basically what he said.
Yeah, I interpreted that as, yeah, well, I'm out of here. So he's going to have to find a way to cope.
There's a lot of other great Yankees to root for.
Right. Like, you're going to have to find a way to cope, kid. Sorry, because I'm gone.
Find someone else.
Yeah, it was really, when you sent this morning, and Murray said this too, and I agree with Murray. I was stunned.
Yeah, I watched it.
Wow.
I was like, holy crap. He basically told that kid to go F himself.
It was,
like, I'm leaving.
And it was uncomfortable, too, watching it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he got put on the spot there a little bit, and you could almost see this expression on his face. Like,
I think he was pissed at the reporter.
Yeah, like, how am I going to answer this one? And it's like, well, you know, suck it up, kid.
Yeah.
I'm out of here.
I mean, really?
You know, that's what it felt like. Yeah, that's what it felt like. I'm gone. And so this is going on in the game. Like, I do think there's now this backlash, and you call it collusion, call it whatever you want, among owners about giving out these whopper deals and that they don't want to do it anymore. And so, like, the Jose Ramirez deal with Cleveland, I keep going back to that. That is a below market deal by a lot. By a lot. Like, agents and players and union people, they got to be pissed at that deal.
Is he a good third baseman?
He's a yes. Yeah. I would say, yeah, good.
Better than Devers?
I mean,
defensively.
Good question, Mike. I haven't seen enough of him to say, like, but my recollection is that his reputation is good, not great,
mm-hmm.
but good.
Mm-hmm.
And so now, look, I could be totally wrong. Maybe he's won gold gloves, but $20 million a year? And he's a switch hitter, I think.
Mm.
I'm pretty sure. So, that is a – that's one that hurts the players. Like, they got to be pissed at that sort of thing. So, you know, look, I don't begrudge the players in this one. They look at it and say, I can make a killing. To do it, I'm probably going to have to go to market and leave. And if they're prepared to do that, then I look at the Red Sox and say, you're entitled to let him go, but you better replace him.
So look, here's what I'm picking up. And it is on the subtle side, and it's kind of between the lines. But I think it is apparent that Red Sox players are at odds with the team and are agitated with the team. And the contract stuff is slipping out very subtly, but it's there. It's there. You know, for Devers to acknowledge that report, because that report is embarrassing to the team.
Mm-hmm.
That offer is embarrassing. 8 years, $168 for a guy who should be a $300 million ball player, and everyone knows it. That makes the Red Sox look like cheapskates. And so when Devers confirms it, that's a shot. You know, he's letting, he want, he, you know, he could say, man, I'm not going to talk about my contract. But when he confirms it, he says it was pretty similar to the Olsen contract. He's like, that to me is a shot. You know, that to me is putting it on the record that he wants to make sure, you know, that's what they offered me, or he's okay letting you know that that's what they offered me. And then when he goes on, he says, I don't want to be compared with anyone else, regardless of what the position is. You know, there's a language barrier there, too. He might have been speaking through a translator even. But, like, that's a key bone of contention. What position do you play? The Sox are, the Sox base that offer on a first baseman slash designated hitter, which is what they say Devers is going to be. And Devers' position is, screw you, I'm a third baseman. And I think that sort of creeps out there in that comment where he mentions the position. So that's a key bone, I think, at the negotiating table. Them breaking into laughter. Now, they could have been laughing at Spear for trying to, you know, slip one past them. But, you know,
I think maybe, you know, Spear made sure we knew they were laughing. Because
I think that you can easily say that they're sort of laughing at, yeah, can you believe that's what they offered me, these jackasses?
Well, that's how they feel.
You know,
I mean, at a minimum, that's how they feel. Whether the laughter was directed at that or not, or, you know,
yeah,
the result of that or not, that's how they feel.
And, you know, finally, I think the Bogarts thing the other day saying, yeah, we need some help, I'd like some help, is you don't hear that every day. And that is, you know, really putting it on the front office. And I think Bogarts is okay putting it on the front office because they've been porking him now for the last couple of years. And he's on his way out and he doesn't mind sort of putting it on him.
And Mike, in spring training, too, they came out and you know, were aware that players were signing elsewhere and they hadn't signed Trevor Story yet. So they were grumbling about that, too. They clearly, well, but, no, it's a good point.
But if we go back to the spring training, the Bogarts side, I think, leaked out that hideous offer to him. So I think we got a thing between the players and the team. And they're not the only ones. It's fair to point that out. It's going on across the league, but I definitely think it's happening here. All right, we'll pick up your thoughts on this at 617-779-0985 right after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Love each other.
That's a lie. It's bullcrap.
And the audience loves them.
I'm definitely grumpy. I don't care. Well, listen, guess what? You're in New England.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Up.
What's the goal for the second half? Are you guys going to make some moves, make some trades? I know trying to catch the Yankees and win a division is whatever, but you got an extra playoff team this year. Is the goal to get to the playoffs and then roll the dice?
I think that is the goal. Obviously, we saw what happened last year. I mean, we played the wild card game. No one expected us to win, and we beat the Yankees, you know. So anything can happen in a wild card game is, I mean, and it's just, I feel like we should get some help. You know, we saw what happened last year. I know we got Schwarber. I was saying back there, that's someone that carried the team for multiple stretches last year, you know. And I don't know if we could get some of that impact, but it would be nice to get some help for sure.
Certainly, Xander Bogart's tone there is not contentious. So I'm not, like, I think it's more subtle here than it would be in, say, with Soto and the private plane and Judge. But I just think the fact that he was willing to go there says something. Because usually players say, I believe we can win with the guys we got. Not my job. But either way, mix in your Red Sox thoughts with everything we've hit on today. Corey is standing by in L.A. Hi, Corey.
Hey, and Maz, I just got to say, you know, if you want an elite group of musicians that could play the old authentic Italian stuff, not that that's amore crap, and pop music, I got you covered. But yes, I'm
so
in
your next
LA
wedding, Maz, you'll have Corey.
Yeah.
The anniversary.
Yeah, at the anniversary. I'm playing a lot of Italian festivals this year, actually. But so I'm playing some concerts out here in L.A., and I didn't even realize that the All-Star Game was here until after I landed, which shows kind of the state of baseball before I used to always know. So I go to the game. And, you know, I see Mookie Betts, our former superstar, who is now there, which I actually didn't care when he left. I was one of the few that really didn't care because of his postseason average, but whatever, he's there. Martin Perez. Oh, yeah, he was on the team before. Remember him? Kyle Schwarber. We had him on the team last year, yep. And the guy I'm most pissed about leaving, Ben Attendee. Yep, he was there. Also, J.D. Martinez. He'll be gone, even though I love J.D. Martinez. He'll be gone. And then there's Xander Bogaerts playing there. Yeah, he'll be gone next year. And then Devers, he'll probably be gone too. So what the hell am I doing going to the All-Star game to see all these former Red Sox or Red Sox that won't be Red Sox, many of them homegrown? What is this team doing? And the last time I was at Dodger Stadium was 4 years ago when they won the World Series in Game 5. I was there for that. And now I see this. What is this team doing, guys?
So what is this team doing? It led to – we get it every time that we go down this road about them not paying their guys and trimming payroll and – you know, what are they doing? And invariably we get emails or calls that people ask, is Henry looking to sell the team? You consider that again, Maz, in this circumstance?
Yeah, look, again, I got him last night on the baseball hour because people think, you know, or I say think, once they see payroll changing, they immediately say, well, they're stripping it down, they're minimizing the debt and the length of the contracts, and they're going to sell the team. And normally I would say, okay, that's logical, but it really isn't. It's usually the opposite way. So when this team was bought, what did the Red Sox do? What did the Yawkey Trust do right before these guys bought? They signed Manny Ramirez. They increased the value of Nesson. They jacked the thing up. Then they sold it. And so now, is it, you know, the market's totally different. Baseball's different. Like, a lot of things have changed. But I've told this story a million times, okay? So bear with me. I once asked Henry and Warner, how long are you going to hold the team? And Henry said, 20 years. That's our goal. You know, but they had gotten off to a good start. And they said, now we're thinking more like 25. This was about 7 or 8 years into it, maybe. Mm-hmm. Okay? And they said 25. But that was before, really, Roush Racing, Liverpool, the Pittsburgh Penguins. The Fenway Sports Group now has become this empire.
They want to get into the NBA.
Why now sell the Red Sox? They're part of that empire. Like, so I think the whole goal has changed. Now, you know, Henry might get out or what have you, and someone else will move in, but I don't think it's going to be like someone swooping in and taking it out of Fenway Sports Group.
I don't think at all.
No, so I don't think they're selling.
But what I think it is they're now treating it as an item in a portfolio as part of a bigger play. In other words, when it was just the Red Sox and that was their prized possession, they treated it like that. We want to be the Yankees, the evil empire. We're going to, you know, blow up the state, meaning build up the stadium, build up the team, take on the Yankees, end the curse, win championships. That's the passion. That's where they're at. And now that it's become a conglomerate, it's now being treated more like just one of their holdings in a portfolio.
Right, a retirement fund.
Where the numbers have to make sense, cash in, cash out, and that's the way we're going to run it. And that's why the Tampa Bay way, the Heim Bloom way, is the more affordable way to do it and the more sound business way to do it. And that's what I think. I agree. I don't think they're selling. I think they're
expanding.
They are. It is now not their only thing that they're super passionate about. It is something that has to work in conjunction with everything else and make sense economically. And that's where they're at.
No question. So I don't think they're selling. I don't. You know, and people ask it all the time. They get ready to sell the team. They get ready to sell the team. And I say, no, I think it's the opposite.
And they keep taking on new investors.
Right.
You know, like, and so, no, I'm with you.
I think they're becoming more and more entrenched in it. And so now what does that mean long term for like the payroll and where it's going? I don't know. I keep saying this to you. They have the fourth highest payroll in the game right now. Right. So they're at 240. The only teams that are ahead of them are the Yankees, the Dodgers and the Mets. That's it. The Phillies are just behind them. So it's about what you'd expect. Like those five teams should be probably the top five in the game. And so but they clearly have an aversion to the big contract. And so
do you think after next year they'll be in the top five in the next year or two?
No.
All these guys come off the books.
No.
You know, Martinez, Bogaerts, Eovaldi. You know, all the they still have dead price money, don't they? Like,
yeah.
Know, so there's.
I think this is the last year, but yeah.
You know, like in 2 years, where are they going to be? I bet they'll be 10th. You know, that's where I feel like.
No, you might be right. Yeah, you might be right.
Dennis in Nashville, go ahead, Dennis.
Yeah, I'm calling just to express my opinion about what's going on with the Red Sox right now. As a lifetime Red Sox fan, I'm thoroughly disgusted with this team. I mean, come on. I know you guys don't remember this, but I called you back in April when you started to discuss free agency, and I gave my opinion that I thought that that whatever it takes to sign Devers, they should do it. And I'm still of that opinion. I mean, I don't mean a Mike Trout contract or anything like that, but they got to sign this guy. This is getting ridiculous. I mean, come on. And Bogaerts, I want to see him sign too. But my priority, as far as I'm concerned, is Devers. And I wanted to get your opinion on that. How you felt about that?
Yeah, no, I feel they don't want to pay the bill. They don't want to pay what it's going to take to keep Devers. They've started down the road of doing what they did with Betts and Bogaerts. Not going to pay him. Going to be behind the market. And I think this is the plan. I don't know ultimately if they'll be able to pull the trigger on it, though, because they're going to get so much blowback and lose so much goodwill among their fans that at some point Henry might just say, I know this is bad business, but
we got to bite the bullet.
Community relations. You know, we still have to keep the faith of our fans. We have to keep the bargain with our fans. You know, they still have to trust that we care about their stars and blah, 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 blah. For PR purposes, we have to bite the bullet, and we're going to give them the $350. And I think that's still on the table. But Bloom doesn't want to do it. The plan is not to do it. They don't want to do it. I think ultimately they'll be shamed into it, though.
Yeah, it's but the other thing too is like the marketability of the franchise, if that's what you want to call it, increases the value. So the like you can run it the way they want to run it and say on a year to year basis we'll have better cash flow, okay? But doesn't the value of the franchise suffer? Like, look at the Rays. Are the Rays worth anything?
I don't know.
Like, I can't imagine are.
It's true. They win every year.
Yeah, nobody goes to the games. The TV ratings are good. But is anybody around the country, does anyone want to wear a Tampa Bay Rays hat? Who the hell wants to wear that godforsaken thing? Who the hell wants to be a Rays fan other than some 80-year-old jackass sitting on a beach, you know, with his metal detector trying to find a wristwatch in the sand? Am I joking?
You're not joking.
No.
I mean, you're joking.
I mean, you know what I mean?
Yes.
But am I wrong? Like, I think that what makes the franchise valuable is the marketability of it, the brand. Don't hurt the brand.
I think it's so tempting for an owner, though, to have relatively cheap, sustainable, you know, cyclable players and rosters where you're not bogged down by a big contract or a bad contract, and there's always someone coming up through the system, and I just think that's... It's just too it's what most owners would want, and it's what Henry wants, and that's where you're at. Anthony on Cape Cod, what do you got for us today, Anthony?
Well, you're missing one of the biggest stories, probably the biggest problem with the Red Sox. It's still the entitled culture in that clubhouse with those players. It hasn't been fixed. That's what they brought Chaim Bloom in to fix. But don't put words in my mouth, Felger. I didn't say somebody shouldn't be able to get what they're worth on the open market. Guess what? Xander Bogaerts is getting paid $20 million, and he's going to have an opt-out after the year, and Scott Boras is his agent. Rafael Devers has 2 years arbitration. He's a free agent. These guys can go out and get all the money they can get. Why don't they shut up and start playing baseball so us fans who actually invest our time in this team don't have to watch this slop show every night?
Let me tell you, Anthony, I think the players have showed remarkable restraint. We have to read between the lines to sort of get the tension that exists between the players and the team. I think Bogaerts has done a terrific job biting his tongue. The thing that he did before the season started. Remember, Jimmy, can you just play that again? We had it yesterday. You know, I know it'll take a second. But, you know, where he's asked, did you get an offer? And he goes, yeah. So is that him crying about his contract? That I thought that showed a lot of restraint in a lot of leagues. I mean, hell, if he's someone in the NFL or NBA or even the hockey, whatever. I mean, most pro athletes,
he's ripping,
are pitching a fit. They're pitching a fit if they're not getting paid. And the most Xander Bogaerts does is when he's asked, "Did you get a contract offer?" He goes, "Yeah." And we have to infer. And it's not that hard to infer that he was unhappy with it. But I think so. He needs to shut up. I think he's done a really good job of keeping it above the line, frankly.
Yeah, and the reason you're hearing about it now is because it's the All-Star break. So these guys go out to Los Angeles, and now this is typical. You get all these types of contract questions. Aaron Judge got one last night. right? The Soto thing came out right at the All-Star. It always happens this way.
Right.
And that one came from the management side, because why would Soto release that? He turned down $500 million. He wouldn't. So, because they're trying to make him look bad, but this is what happens at this time of year. It always comes out around this time. They'll start playing the games again, but they didn't talk about it while they were, you know. And the other thing is, these two guys, for the most part, have played well.
Jimmy, do you have the Bogarts thing? Okay. If you don't, you don't. The you know, I mean, even Devers. I mean, Alex Spear, who's a team guy, you know, more aligned with the team than the players, I think, you know, found out that they used Matt Olson as a jumping off point, as a basis for negotiations. Devers didn't say that. So he was asked, and Devers' answer was, it was pretty similar. I know my value. I don't want to be compared with anyone else, regardless of the position. I'm me. That's who I want to be compared to. I know what my value is. Is that crying? Like, he was asked, and so he sort of answered. But I think those guys are showing restraint, frankly. All right, so we've got an update from Big Jim Murray, and we're right back with more calls. Don't go anywhere.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Oh, he is a manipulative weasel.
And Matt.
He does himself no service by actually talking.
You've got to listen to believe.
It's about me.
Yes, absolutely.
It's about me.
No question.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hugs for Jordan Poole and Klay Thompson. They're going to take the shot clock violation here as the final seconds tick off the clock. It seemed impossible. For 3 years, they went through setbacks, through injuries, through heartbreak. And it felt for all the world like their time had passed. But the gold has risen to the top. And the Warriors are NBA champions again. They are the second team in NBA history to come to Boston and beat the Celtics in Boston for the NBA championship. A sellout crowd came here to see history, and they do. As the Golden State Warriors impart the final lesson to the Boston Celtics about the difference between being a great team and a championship team. The final score in Game 6, Golden State 103, Boston 90. The Golden State Warriors are NBA champions again.
All right, so why are we playing you that? Sorry, I know it's painful. That was our final call of the Golden State Warriors defeating the Boston Celtics in Game 6 of the NBA Finals. The Warriors won that series, right? I just wanted to, you know, reset the historical record on that
one. That is correct. Yes, the Warriors are the NBA champs. That's right.
Okay. So when you play a seven-game series against a team and they beat you, wouldn't...
In six.
Yeah, wouldn't you say that if you have seven games to determine who's better and... someone over those seven games beat you, you would just have to say they're the better team.
Yes.
I mean, a one-off thing, like, for example, like you play someone in golf once every year and he beats you one day. That can happen to anyone, right?
Oh, correct. Yeah, that's a one-off.
But, like, over an extended period of time, Maz, right? You can't say who's better. You got, you know, over a seven-game series. Now, there's someone who's clearly better, right?
Right. There's a pattern there. You know, that's over a longer term.
I don't know why the golf thing leapt to mind, but it just did.
Funny.
Convenient timing.
Maz was lights out today, Murray.
I've seen him before.
He was freaking dialed. Thing of beauty. Anyway.
And no sweet tooth, Murray. El Chapo.
All right. So we play this again. So the Celtics lost. The Warriors were better. Okay. Meanwhile, Grant Williams is on a podcast, because isn't everybody, during an appearance on the Long Shot podcast with Miami Heat forward Duncan Robinson and co-host Davis Reed, Williams was asked about the finals, and get a load of what he said. Go ahead, Jimmy.
Like, I still will say confidently to this day, they weren't the better team. You know what I mean? Like,
Golden State was not the better team.
Yeah, I would say that confidently. I would say they were a more disciplined team. I would say that without a doubt, like, their discipline and also their, I guess their, what you say, their history of being in the finals.
Championship
like,
pedigree.
Championship pedigree, you say, that was real.
Yeah.
And I feel like at times, like when you go back and watch the film, like we were had commanding like either leads or had opportunities. We went on runs, and next thing you know, we just like turned it over three times because we missed three shots. Because instead of making the right read, because we missed those shots, we started forcing things. And just stuff like that, the discipline of just making the right play over and over and over again, we didn't play with. Well, they play the same no matter what. They're going to get the same shots. They're going to create the same looks. They know who the priorities are. And they're going to play with pace. And they had a great, you know, like spacing. Like even us, we weren't disciplined enough spacing the floor. Like that stuff. Less so the fact that they were more like a talent thing. Because Steph is phenomenal. Steph is the best point guard ever, honestly, he's just by talented. Playing against this man. Like, he is unreal. I've never played anybody like him. But, like, when I look down, like, down a line or even just comparing the teams or even just, like, what we felt on the court, you should have heard how badly they celebrated after game four. They were, like, screaming because they knew they weren't supposed to win that game.
Right.
Oh. And, like, stuff like that where it's, like, we just were confidence-wise. Like we knew, I think, the overconfidence side of things kind of got to us. Mm-hmm. Like, discipline, not understanding that, yeah, like, we may be the better team. That same thing happened against, I would say, in that rookie bubble. Like, I remember we didn't take y'all serious as we should have that year because we were so, quote, loaded as talent-wise with Gordon, Kemba, Smart, JB, JT.
Okay, so he goes on. Your thoughts.
And it's sour grapes loser talk. I hate this. I mean, it reminds me, and I'm going back 20 years, I remember when the Steelers lost that AFC Championship game to the Patriots, Cordell Stewart's out there saying, well, we're the better team. The better team didn't win today. He goes on to say, like, why the Golden State Warriors are the better team. They're disciplined. That's what makes them the better team. I think his phrasing's wrong. Had he said, we had a lot of talent, and I think we probably could have won this, that I agree with. I thought the Celtics were the more talented team on paper. But the better team, the discipline that you saw, the pedigree, that winning thing, that tangible thing that the Golden State Warriors have, that's why they are the better team.
I mean, he's confusing better team with more talented.
Yeah.
Like, the whole point of being a team is to play together, to have discipline, to execute under pressure. That's the point. And I find it curious that it's coming from a guy who made 9 field goals in 6 games. 9. He had 1.5 buckets per game. That's it. He sucked in this series. So you want to tell me that, what, you're more talented than some of the guys they brought off the bench? Like, where the hell is this coming from?
Dude, it's a problem with this team. And it would be my number one worry as a Celtic fan going into this season that these guys are going to think they've already arrived or they won something. Their mindset, which was my issue with the team going into the year, into the series. That's why I like the Warriors in the first place, because of their maturity level. The Celts still, they don't get it, man. It's one thing for us to say the Celts were the better team. I happen to think the Celts were the better team. Definitely more talented. And even the matchup thing. Like, they matched up well with the Warriors. They should have beaten the Warriors. That's for me to say. If a player who loses a 7-game series turns around and says we were still the better team, ugh. Freaking loser.
Especially a player like Grant Williams. I wouldn't like this if this was from Tatum or Brown, but it would be at least a more understandable thing to me in that it's like, okay, coming from one of the stars of the team. Again, this anytime with Grant Williams, dude, who are you? Why are you speaking?
When I've reflected back and looked at those games, I would say confidently, to this day, they weren't the better team. You freaking idiot.
I thought we were past this.
Like, what are you doing?
Again, I thought this goes back to, like, Jaylen Brown saying, you know, we're going to win 5 or 6 titles and putting the cart ahead of the horse. And look, Grant Williams is a little younger than those guys, so maybe he's just doing what they did at that time.
You know what the Celtics should be saying about the Warriors today? They taught us a lesson.
Yeah, yes. Right.
They taught us a lesson.
We want to be them.
We're not ready. We're not ready, and they taught us that.
We're going to learn from the experience. This is going to be a building block.
Oh, my God.
This team leads the league in big personality role players. It's bad enough with Smart. Now this guy, too.
He is, and the way he plays on the floor and off. And it's an issue on this team. It's going to be an issue on this team this year where they're going to I think they're going to roll the ball some nights, and they're going to act like,
we've arrived. We've done it. Yeah.
We're finalists. We should have won that thing. We were the better team. You know, they carried on when they lost to the Cavs in game 7. They carried on for a couple of years like they had arrived. Like they'd won that game. That's how they talked about it. Like they actually won that game. Are we going to show up next year and the Celtics are going to be prancing around with their chest puffed out, acting like they won the finals? Like, I get the feeling we will.
Yeah, there's a lot of danger in that.
That should have been humbling. That shouldn't have fed their ego. That should have humbled them. They blew it. I mean, he's right. The game four, they had him on the ropes. And that was going to be the series. That was the championship. So instead of coming out here and saying, I would say confidently, to this day, they weren't the better team. I'd sit there and saying, hopefully we learned. We learned from that series. They taught us a lesson. But I don't know. Like, that to me, that's going to be an issue with the Celtics. You've had to worry about this for a while. Ego and maturity, and do they get it? And they still don't, as evidenced by Grant Williams. All right, just wanted to get that in there. Mix it in with our thoughts on everything else. Back to your calls in our long commercial-free segment next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com. The best analysis.
Forget about what's being said. Everyone's ripping someone for something somewhere.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Let's put it this way. Trevor Story is making $23 million a year in this contract he signed in Boston. Rafael Devers is a much more valuable player than Trevor Story.
Yeah.
So to offer him that low amount of money, to me, is crazy. And if you look at since 2019, I mean, Devers, I thought, really started coming on the second half of 2018 with Alex Cora. Even since 2019, ranked in OPS, Devers is the eighth most productive offensive player in baseball. He's ahead of Mookie Betts. He's ahead of Ronald Acuna Jr. He's one of the best hitters in baseball. To offer him $21 million a year when he's 25 years old is just insulting.
Matt Olson. I don't know if people knew that Matt Olson played for the Braves. And by the way, before that, he played for the A's. So he hasn't played in a higher-pressure situation, a high-pressure city. Rafael Devers has also done this in Boston. That's another thing that I think people tend to overlook in these situations. But he's at least a $30 million a year player. I mean, and he is raw. And as you said, Amina, he's young. He's only going to get better. He continues to improve. And he continues to improve defensively, too, which it seems like the Red Sox are holding his defense against them in these situations. Yes, that is crazy. And that's a negotiation. It's an insult.
So that was Jason Mastrodonato of the Herald. And then you heard Tom Giles here at NBC Sports Boston. Red Sox offered to Devers an embarrassment, insulting. That seems to be the consensus opinion out there. We're talking about that. Mixing in these Grant Williams comments. Can reset some of our Patriots stuff in the next hour that we began the program with. Whatever you want. Sean in Salem, though, brings us back here on the Sox. Go ahead, Sean.
Hey, I really think this Bloom system is intentional to produce utility players rather than superstars through the draft, like not taking the best available. If you think about it, what position player for Tampa has ever hit free agency and got a big contract or considered a superstar? If your scouts are that good, why are there never superstars produced, right? You look at when they bring them up, they have them play multiple positions, and like you guys mentioned with Devers, they label them as first basemen rather than third to often save money. I just don't know. Do you think that's intentionally their plan not to get the big superstar?
Well, that's an interesting thought. Make him positionless. So he becomes more of a utility guy. I was just, you know, writing down Tampa Bay superstars. Longoria was definitely a superstar.
Franco is, but I know he's just recently come up.
But they also signed him, yeah. Wanda they signed Franco. Both of those guys.
They re-signed him.
Yeah.
Early.
Yeah, Franco got a big deal, and early. So did Longoria.
Okay.
They signed them both early.
They've had some pitching stars like Snell.
Yep.
Who before
James
then?
Shields.
Okay, Shields.
Price.
Yeah. David Price and Crawford. But I feel like Crawford was before the nerd takeover.
Yeah, that's probably right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's probably right.
But it's true. Like this, you don't have the megastars coming out of Tampa. Is there a reason?
Well, so, I mean, I don't know, like, you know, Longoria was a high pick. He was highly touted, you know, and now I'm going back 15 years, but like B.J. Upton was a high pick.
Yeah.
You know, Wander Franco was the number one prospect in all of baseball. So I don't know that it's totally true. I think that what they've done, they've augmented it with guys from other organizations that they've picked up and gotten a lot out of. But I think they, I think what happens is they sign these guys to big contracts. And again, let's use Longoria as an example. But then when they get to the years where the salary's going up, they got to move them. And then they try to get something for them.
Here's Brian in Brockton on those Grant Williams comments. What do you think, Brian? Brian! All right, man, I'll put you on hold. You got to turn down your radio. Justin in South Carolina on the Celtics. Go ahead, Justin.
Yeah, thanks for taking the call, guys. So this is kind of in relation to what you're talking about with Grant Williams and this general, you know, feeling that, you know, the Celtics players' mindset is that they've already arrived. So they have this big turnaround, you know, in January and go on this great run. And part of the, one of the narratives was that, you know, EA was this former player coach who, you know, was able to resonate with them, to kind of get into them and get in their face and whatnot. Are we thinking now that maybe Udoka is not the right guy for the job if they're still talking like this?
No. But he's got work to do, Justin. That's what I would say. This is on Udoka to go to Grant Williams and anyone else who feels this way and let them know you lost. You didn't win. And in fact, you kind of got shown up by a team that knew how to win and you didn't. And that should be what you're talking about, not being the better team.
Yeah, and my guess is that Udoka would agree with us today.
Totally.
Like, remember that comment he made about, you know, was it with the Midday Show when he did their interview? And he's like, we can't get Grant Williams to shut up.
Yeah.
Telling me it's, like, and I'm paraphrasing.
Oh, he definitely thinks he's a pain in the ass.
Right, but I'm paraphrasing. But it was something like that. Like, yeah, we told him, you know, it's one comment a day or something like that.
Right.
I don't remember what the hell it was, but it was something to that effect. So they just much look at, like, part of me wonders if they look at him and say, oh, God, would you please shut the hell up?
So to me, it is partly a Grant Williams story, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's players on the team who feel the same way, because that's sort of how they carry themselves. It's a group that thinks very highly of itself, tends to think it's accomplished things that it hasn't, and I don't think fully gets it. I mean, close, right? I mean, they don't suck. I'm not telling you this. But I think part of the reason why they lost that thing last year is that they weren't quite fully mature. And I see comments like this, and I still say, you're still not fully mature. You didn't win. You're not the better team. And if you are, you should not be. You're the last person to say it. Not last person. And when I would say that, I'm not talking about Grant Williams. I'm talking about the last group of people. The players on the floor should never say, we were the better team. If they were, it's okay for us to say or someone else to say, but it shouldn't be them. Nick in East Longmeadow on the Sox. Go ahead, Nick.
Hey, how's it going, brother? Just a quick point here on Chaim Bloom and how I think he's going to use Dombrowski as a bit of a scapegoat for the minor league team. All these prospects that are either already up or coming up in the next 1 to 2 years weren't drafted by Bloom. And I think he's going to make a pitch to the ownership and say, hey, look, guess what? Not only did I inherit a team riddled with lousy contracts, but I also inherited a minor league system that stunk for many years and continues to stink. So a lot.
No. Like, their system's almost in the top 10 in the league now, right?
Yeah, they got up to 11. I think they're in the top 10 at the end of last season. They get to like number 9, and by the beginning of the next season, they were at 11, which is where they are now. The last time I checked, so they're basically in the top third.
No, Bloom doesn't have to make excuses for the system and what's coming up. He needs to make excuses for the underperformance of the major league club. Like that, I think you could have it backwards, caller. But it is interesting how the top prospects, Bayo, he's a Bloom guy. I mean, a Dombrowski guy. Who else, Mass?
Cassis.
Cassis is a Dombrowski guy. It's like their top two guys are Dombrowski guys.
Correct. Yeah, and Mayer, who just got picked. I mean, he was the number 4 pick in the draft. He's been playing pro ball for a year. You know, so, you know, that one's a Bloom pick. But the reason he's even included up there is just because he was, you know, the potential for him is really high.
All right, Red Sox, those Grant Williams comments, that's definitely on the table. We'll reset some of our Patriots thoughts next hour as well. First, a 90-second update from Big Jim Murray. There are no commercials, so don't leave your radio.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.